All right. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. All right.
Okay.
So first, we just will start off with like a brief introduction of who you are and the and basically like just tell me about who you are and the work that you currently do.
Okay. All right. Well, my name is Stephanie Diane Bell. I am currently the director of the Metamorphosis Project for Out Memphis, so I pretty much am over all of our youth homeless program in Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay. And so how does that program work? So what is the what does that project involve?
So that project involves for LGBT youth ages 18 to 24. They'll come in and sit down and talk with me, the case manager, or our specialist, and let us know exactly, like, they're homeless, that they're homeless, and they'll come in and take an assessment so we can assess the level of homelessness to determine, like, what program is it they're going to go in, whether they're going to come into our rapid rehousing program, which we provide housing assistance for a year, up to 2 years, or if they have too many, like, barriers such as mental health issues, and they show that they don't have the ability to be housed on their own, where they can't take their medication, or they don't understand the ins and outs of taking care of an apartment, and they need intensive case management, then we will refer them to other housing programs in Memphis, Tennessee. And most of our clients are queer Black African Americans. We've had some race, the majority of them have been African American, and within the program, like, once we help them get the apartment and set them up for a year, we provide furnishing for the apartment from our donation center. They have access to the donation center, which includes like food, hygiene products, as well as any other resources that community members donate that they will be find useful. We also provide them like bus passes to help them with transportation, case management. If they need, like, help get connected with mental health resources, we connect them to that as well. They have access to other programmings and groups at Out Memphis, such as for those 18 to 25, we have on Fridays a group called – my mind went blank for a minute. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
We have a youth group for those 18 to 25 called Gen Q, in which they come hang out, play video games, whatever it is. Sometimes we have, like, activities for them to do to just, like, escape from the day-to-day and give them a space to be safe.
Okay.
And like, currently we have 12 youth in there, but the way we have our grant that is funded through HUD, we typically can only assist 10 youth, but sometimes we can find an apartment or a duplex or something that is reasonable where we can take in a person or two, or we find two people actually a good fit, and we can do, like, roommate situation, which allows us to take in more people.
Okay. What kind of led you to, have you always wanted to do that kind of work, and what kind of led you to this project and just being involved with something? So this actually is really unique, I think, for the South.
Okay. Well, recently when I went to school, I started out in the medical field. Like, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be an obstetrician. But, like, after, like, getting into it, and, like, I realized chemistry was not my thing, I kind of, like, took a break from school, worked for a few years at local Dollar General in my hometown of Water Valley, and then in 2007, I decided to go back to school, and during that time, I kind of got an interest in psychology. And I took a couple of adolescent psychology class and human growth and development classes that kind of got me interested in youth. And then I started thinking about, like, me as a queer youth growing up in Water Valley, how there wasn't anything for me. There wasn't, like any type of, like, support system aside from, like, my few friends who were okay with it. So, and so one day I was, like, in, like, my last class at the community college I was going to, Itawamba Community College, and I was reading this article for my adolescent class right before I had, like, my final exam, and I was sitting there, and I was like, this reminds me so much of what I was going through. I was like, I really want to take my degree and focus on youth. But when at the time I graduated from there and the Women's University and I got into the work field, it kind of wasn't anything available, so I started working at Maximus. And I just got lucky, like, towards, like, the last year, the contract of Maximus Out Memphis was hiring, and they was hiring for the youth service specialist. I was like, I really want to work with youth. Like, I've always wanted to make an impact on LGBT youth because of the things I experienced, because I did not have any guidance or anyone to help me figure myself out along the years. So I applied for the position. The first time it was up, I didn't get it. I applied for it again in 2016, and I got called for the interviews. I did a couple of the interviews, and then I got called into it. And then after that, I just flourished in the job because I was so passionate about it, and I could relate to a lot of the youth because of things like I experienced throughout my childhood. And, you know, like I was very real and transparent with them and helping them guide them along the way to be successful, like in the program. So it's like so most of it comes from just like my experience and not having anything to fall back on when I was growing up. And like I always remember those experiences of not having a platform to have a voice or not really having anything there for me that kind of like got me really into this field and applied for Out Memphis and has kept me at Out Memphis for so long.
So you grew up in Water Valley, Mississippi?
I did. Yes, I did.
So what was that like? Can you talk about a little how, like, what was the place you grew up like as far as Water Valley back then?
Okay. Water Valley is, like, honestly, like, 2019 from when I was growing up hasn't changed much. It's, like, you've had, like, a lot of stores closed down over the years, come and go. But, honestly, like, the community hasn't changed. It's very close-knit. Everybody knows each other. Most of us are pretty much there for each other. If somebody needs something, we know something. It's like when we see somebody in need, we do our best to help them. But growing up as a child, you didn't really see a lot of, like, LGBTQ community members. If you did see somebody, it's like it was always a negative aspect. They was like, there goes that punk, there goes that faggot, there goes, you know, it was always like this negative entity attached to it. Because I remember mom and grandma's child, one of their friends, their child, he was part of the community. And everybody used to always make fun of him and the guy that he was, I'm assuming, friends with, but I later found out was his partner, you know, was, they were always calling him punks and fagging and making fun of them as, like, he getting his booty busted wide open and stuff like that, like, in the neighborhood. So, like, when I was, like, in the fourth grade and I was kind of, like, figuring myself out and realizing I was finding myself a little attracted to the girls, not so much the boys. For me, it was, like, really difficult because I was seeing, like, how people was, like, reacting in town, or they was always talking about, you know, the gay guys who were, like, more open and disclosing themselves were like, oh, they got AIDS, they got that package, they spreading that stuff around to everybody, the women and the men. So it was, like, always, like, very scary to be a part of the community growing up. And, like, even, like, in school, like, I came out to, like, most of my friends in school when I was, like, 16, and, you know, I always thought that was going to be, like, a positive thing, and come to find out it wasn't. Like, I only had one friend, my best friend, Margaret, who, like, stuck through me, like, the whole time with me realizing that I was gay. Like, she never, like, changed her perspective on me. She never, like, not wanted to be around me. She never really, like, kind of closed off for me because, like.
All right, we're back. Okay. But, yeah, you can continue. I think you were talking about your best friend, Margaret, and how that was one of the people that kind of stood by you.
Yeah, she was. She never, like, turned her back on me, like, anything. Like, it was so bad to, like, a lot of my classmates and stuff used to, like, push the issue that thought, like, she was the girl that I was dating because of the simple fact that we were so close and she understood me from a way that they did not. Because, like, I remember, like, this one trip we had to go on for this group that I was in. We went to Jackson, Mississippi on a field trip, and we had to stay overnight at the hotel. And, like, the people who were in my room were girls I grew up with. They were my cousins, you know, so I've known them my whole entire life. Like, they didn't want to share a bed with me. They was like, I'm not sharing no bed with you. And it was like, I'm like, but I'm not even attracted to y'all. Y'all aren't even my type. And so it's like all of them piled in one bed versus me. And, like, it was one other girl whose sister, she was like, I don't even care about this. Like, I want to sleep. I'm not sleeping in no floor, and I'm not going to pile in a whole bunch of bed with other people. So she ended up sharing the bed with me. And it was like, which is so weird because that did nothing happen. She slept, I slept. We got up the next day, we got ready, we went, did the event we had to do, we came back, we packed up, and we went home. But it's like my whole time, you know, like throughout high school, it's like people tried to pick on me, but it didn't really affect me because I've never been, like, one of those people who really reacted or allowed bullying to get to me. But mm-hmm. as my siblings came up, that's because I still hadn't came out at home at the time, but when they came up and my brother was in junior high school, it's like they switched it over to, like, going after him. They was like, oh, your sister is a lesbian, your sister is a dyke, you know, they was just always like saying stuff like to get to him, and it was affecting him more than me. And like, I really hate that, because my little brother is such a sweet person, he's such a caring person, and mm-hmm. it's like all of us, like, we're very overprotective of each other because we've like been through so much together as siblings, and so mm-hmm. it was like very hard for him to like go through that and to experience that. And like, I always told him, I was like, you know, this isn't about you, this is about me. But I said, it doesn't hurt me, so knowing the fact that it doesn't hurt me, I don't want it to hurt you. But I could tell, like, on a daily basis when somebody came up to him and said something, it like, it bothered him because he didn't fully understand my sexuality and who I was. But at this point in age now, it's like me and him are really cool. It's like, some of my girlfriends he have liked, some he has not liked. So it's like, we have like a much better understanding of me and my sexuality now. And like, even with my job, it's like he's like very proud of me and what I've accomplished in the community.
Okay. And so I want to come back to, like, because you mentioned your brother, and I want to come back to family in just a sec.
Okay.
But I wanted to ask, so you came out at 16.
Yes, I came out to, like, all my friends at 16, but I was still mm-hmm. in the closet at home. Like, at home, I was not out at all, which was very hard because I could be myself when I was out. But when I came home, I gave this idea, this concept of that, you know, I was this heterosexual person. And it's like me and my mom clashed a lot because she used to always say, like, things like, if she did allow me to go out with friends, which I lived a very sheltered life as well, which my mom really did not allow me to go out and hang out with people. And mm-hmm. it was like when I got my first girlfriend at, I think I was like 17, 18, it's like it took hell and hell water for her to let me go out with her. Like, and then like she was like, well, where are you going? I'm like, she stays like right down the road. We're just going riding on the four-wheeler and stuff. It's like she would be okay with that. But like any of my other friends that she knew had boyfriends and stuff like that, like the first thing I'm like, you better not come back pregnant. I'm like, I'm not even interested in guys. Like, dude, that's what I was saying in my head. But I was so scared to like say that out loud. And like, even like when I graduated in 2012 and I first went off to school to Northwest Community College, like there I was very open, very out. That was at a time where I was trying to figure out if I was transgendered or not. And in that time frame, it's like that's when my mom kind of realized that I was gay. And that was a time where mine and her relationship was like very strained and very hard. So it was like coming out young in high school, like with my friends, it was difficult, but the fact that I had that one person that I could rely on, and it was okay. And eventually, like, everybody kind of came around with it. They was like, you know, oh, it was more so like the joke that me and my best friend Margaret was like, oh, they're together. But when in reality, they knew that I was dating this other girl, Megan, because, like, at that point, it's like I didn't care. I'm like, this is my girlfriend, you know, y'all, whatever.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Well, since you mentioned your mother, can you tell me a little bit about, like, who primarily raised you?
Yeah, I can. So my mom and dad got married kind of young. They had me at 18, and so my dad was in the military, so they traveled around a lot. They had me up until I was, like, 4 or 5 years old, and I got sick when I was in California, so my dad's mom and my mom's mom came and got me, and they raised me from around age 3 or 4, actually, around about 4 up until my parents divorced when I was around 7 or 8. And so I kind of like always had my more so my mom and my grandparents in my life than my dad, because he was military, so he was always out or always overseas or something like that. So I really didn't get like the full dynamic of growing up with my dad.
Okay. Were you born in Water Valley and then y'all moved to California and then you and your mom moved back, or how did that work as far as like the traveling?
I was born in Oxford but lived here in Mississippi. My mom and my dad moved to California with me, and then like after like I got sick, my grandparents, my mom stayed in California, my grandparents came and got me, my two grandmothers came and got me.
Mhm. Okay. And you have, and what is your mom, so your dad was in the military, what does your mom do for a living?
At that time, she was, like, working in, like, local department stores and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, like, while she was in California, she had started going to, like, beauty school.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And so how many siblings do you have?
Okay. So I have a full brother, a half-sister on my mom's side. My dad's side is me and my brother. Then I have an adopted sister who is about 6 or 7. And then I have a stepsister.
Okay. And how would you describe your relationship like with your family growing up?
It's always been like a close knit until I hit like my 10 years, and then when me and my mom started like clashing a lot, we started fighting and arguing a lot. But I think most of it came from the fact that I wanted a little bit more independence than what she was giving me, so we clashed a lot for that because I always felt like she was being controlling. But my brother and sister, my half-sister, we've always had, like, a very close, very, like, great relationship. Now, we've had our moments as siblings where we had our fights. We may have stopped talking to each other for a little bit, but it's like we've always bounced back with each other. Like, even with my mom, like, even if we had a moment where we were fighting or arguing, we stopped talking for a period. If something happened and we needed to pull together as a family, we put those differences aside and we came together.
Mm-hmm. Were your grandparents pretty active in your life too growing up?
Yes, on both sides. Like my dad's parents and my mom's parents, they've like always been like very active in my life.
Okay. So I know you mentioned you came out at 16 to your friends. When did you finally just kind of basically just when did you finally come out to your family or just kind of not care anymore about what they think as far as your sexuality?
I know
for
probably,
some people they don't. Oh, go ahead.
I'd say probably when I was, like, 27. Like, that was, like, to that point where I really didn't care. Like, I was bringing girlfriends around and, like, saying, like, and, like, being like, this is, like, I was still saying this is my friend. I hadn't got to that point that I was saying this is my girlfriend. I probably didn't get to that point until my relationship in 2015.
Okay.
But, yeah. So,
how did family generally react?
It's been, like, a lot of positives and negatives. Like, my dad, I kind of finally told my dad in, like, 2011, and he was like, well, I've always known. I was just waiting for you to, like, open up and talk to me about it. But my mom has always kind of been kind of reserved about it. She's never really expressed, like, her opinions about it. I don't think she's never really cared for it because there, like, were some times, like I remember this one time, like, when I was, like, still not really fully, like, understanding my sexuality, but understanding I was different, like, when I was probably, like, saying, right when I turned 16, when I was still kind of, like, figuring it out before I, like, opened up to all my friends. And, like, the church that we was going to, I remember, like, the pastor used to always pray that he was going to pray out that homosexual demon out of me. And, like, after that moment right there, that's when, like, that relationship with my mom, like, really took that strain where I think she was, like, I don't know if she, like, really hated me because of who I was or she just did not like it or she just didn't understand because we really weren't communicating. I just knew there was something about me she didn't like, and we were just having disagreements around it.
Mm-hmm. So did church and religion play a huge role in your life growing up?
It did, because my parents haven't been weren't so, like, into the church like my grandparents were. So I feel like that time frame when my grandparents were raising me, you know, I would always go to church with them on Sundays and stuff, and then, you know, my mom at some point got to the point where she was taking us to church. We were going to church all the time. So I've always had, like, that very strong religious Christian background. So for me, that was, like, a struggle, too, with me, like, trying to figure out who I was and my sexuality. It caused, like, a lot of conflict with myself because I always thought, like, you know, something is wrong with me because, you know, I was told, like, if, you know, you are homosexual, you're going to hell, you're this, you're that, Mm-hmm. You're all these, like, negative entities. And at some point, it kind of called me to, like, pull away from the church because it seemed like every time, like, I would go to some, like, church function, a funeral, a wedding or something, it always seemed like the pastor, in a sense, turned to make it, like, a sermon or a speech mm-hmm. about homosexuality. And for me, that just kind of, like, pushed me away. I'm like, I don't want to go somewhere every time just because I'm dressing masculine. I'm being called mm-hmm. out, and I'm being pointed out, and I'm the only female here that's dressed like this. So I know that you're, like, directing it towards me. So mm-hmm. for me, it caused me to pull away, and it caused me to really not look for, like, my spirituality and religious needs and other means, where I got to the point where I was, like, practicing Wiccanism, and I was, like, praying more so to the older gods, like the Egyptian gods and stuff like that, versus, like, being in the church. Like, mm-hmm. but if you look at me now versus back then, I've kind of, like, found my way back to, like, Christianity and kind of found a way to make it work for me and mm-hmm. understanding the scripture from, like, a different perspective. And one thing that has really helped me is the group that we started right before the COVID-19 pandemic was the religious group Hope Without Memphis. Like, that group has been, like, a godsend for me, like, helping me reconnect spiritually and understanding Christianity from a different perspective.
Hmm. Okay. So do your grandparents know, or have you had any kind of conversation with them about your sexuality?
I know for a fact, like, both of my grandmothers do, and my granddad on my dad's side, he died before I could really, like, sit down and have a conversation with him about, like, me dating and my sexuality. But I kind of feel like he always knew, he just never really made an issue on it. And, like, my mom's dad, he's always been kind of laid back and cool. He's, like, never really had any negative to say about any female that I brought around, and, like, never really, like, questioned anything. So I just really just came out and told him that I date women.
Okay. So generally, and I don't want to ask something so leading, but generally, the experience just has been, like, would you say it's been mostly positive or negative just in general when it comes to family, as far as your sexuality and actually bringing partners around?
Overall, it's been mostly positive. If they said something, they've never really said it in my face. I think, like, mm-hmm. my most positive, like, immediate family that I grew up, like, in the household with, have been my mom's sister, my aunt that lives in California. She's, like, been, like, the most supportive. I remember, like, my first time in, how was that? It was in 2002, like, 2001, first when we went with her wedding. That was my first time going out there visiting her since I was a child. And, you know, mm-hmm. she took me around and showed me, like, she was showing me, you know, like, a lot of the gay stuff around and stuff like that, you know. She would listen to me talk. I was talking about the girl I was dating and stuff. So, you know, that was one, like, positive, like, adult relationship I had as far as, like, my sexuality.
Okay. Did you have any other family that you're close to or were close to growing up, that you're close to or know about your sexuality?
Some of my cousins are in Chicago, and, like, one of them, like, she's actually part of the community. She identifies as bisexual. And then mm-hmm. my younger cousin, who will be 24 next month, she came out to me, I'd say about the middle of last year. She's always known. She never really had anything negative to say about it. Like, she may not like some of the people I've dated because of, like, they were not, like, African-American. They were, like, other races. But other than mm-hmm. that, you know, she's never really, like, had anything negative to say about me being part of the community.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, but most of the time with my family, if they have something to say, they talk about it amongst themselves. They're not too quick to say it to your face. It's like you get snippeted later on down the road or 2 or 3 years later when somebody mad at somebody.
Mm-hmm. So I know you mentioned school a little bit as far as, like, being 16 and finally just, like, telling your friends. But before mm-hmm. that, like, before you kind of got the courage to do that, when did you first become aware that something felt different, like that something just you felt, like, different from the expectation that other people had for you as a girl growing up or as a person growing up, people expected to be a certain way?
I think I always felt that I was different because, like, I remember, like, when my very first trip went to visit my aunt, I was, like, 9 years old, and in that trip, I started developing breasts. And, you know, I was mad and angry about it because I was no longer flat-chested. That was, like, one way I realized I was different. And then in the fourth grade, there was, like, this girl who moved, and I don't know why she was actually older than she wasn't supposed to be in the fourth grade. She was actually supposed to be in the sixth grade, but they put her in the fourth grade with us. And she was very well developed already. And so, as well, so she was in the bathroom and we were all standing around the mirror, and she was like pulling out her breasts. And I was like, ooh, those are nice. I wonder, like, what it's like to, like, cuddle up with those. So I was like, Stephanie, that's not a normal way to be thinking. That was, like, that's literally what came in my head. And I kind of, like, pushed it back. But then, like, it kind of, like, started, like, playing. I was like, you're not like everybody else. You look different. And then, like, even then, like, I didn't really care to, like, dress very feminine. I've always, like, preferred, like, to dress masculine, where the go in the boys section and shop. And, like, I would get, like, start working mad when my grandma would, like, pull out a dress and tell me I had to wear a dress or pull out something, like, really girly. And so by the time I was probably, like, sixth grade, yeah, I kind of, like, I had my first kiss with a girl, like, and, like, okay, I was, like, all right, I am different. Like, I like this more so when I kissed a boy. So because I had my first kiss with a boy was, like, I think I was, like, eight. Yeah, eight. Because, like, it was, like, one of the, like, little boys, like, in the neighborhood, just leaning, he's, like, leaning over there, and he, like, picked me on the lip. And so, yeah, so, like, and I, but then I was like, okay, I like this. I like this a lot. And I kind of like, but I was scared because, you know, you hear, like, so many people, like, saying negative things around it. So I kind of, like, kept it to myself and kind of, like, was trying to find out, like, what does that mean? I was, like, if I went somewhere, if, like, I was, like, at the bookstore, so I would, like, walk around the bookstore and trying to find, like, books and stuff when I would go to the mall in Oxford. That was back when Oxford still had the mall and had the bookstore in there. And so, It was like, very weird trying to find stuff and, like, find stuff in a way that nobody knew what I was looking for, what I was searching for. And then, like, at that time, like, my grandma had gave me a TV in my room. And so I had, like, I was, like, able to shut my room off watching my own TV and stuff. And, like, I was in scorn and finding things like that, the late-night HBO shows. And I was finding, like, women being interactive with each other. And that's when I was, like, learning about sex and stuff like that. So I was like, oh, women can have sex with women. Okay, so, like, so this is normal. And, like, as I was starting, like, explore, like, stuff about sex, like, through, like, TV shows and stuff like that, and, you know, as I was able to get access to the libraries and different books and stuff, I was starting to understand, like, oh, lesbianism means you like women and, like, to have sex with each other and stuff. So I was like, okay, I'm not normal. I'm normal, but I'm not normal in the sense that society wants me to be. And so I kind of, like, but I still kind of, like, didn't tell anybody. I kind of, like, kept it shush-shush. And, like, as, like, I got into, like, seventh and eighth grade, people were, like, starting to question because, like, I wasn't interested in getting a boyfriend. It was like, oh, this boy likes you. I mean, the guys were, like, coming up to me all the time, like, asking me out, telling me how pretty I was and all this stuff like that, but I just was not interested. Like, every once in a while, I would find one I was interested in, and I'd give them a little note, but then when it, like, all planned out, I was, like, so happy that they didn't, like, respond to me because, like, deep down, I really was not interested in them. And so people, like, were always constantly trying to hook me up and trying to figure me out. And then what actually caused me to, like, come out at 16 was the fact that I went to, like, a football game, and on the way back, they were trying to hook me up with this guy, He kept trying. He was rubbing on me. He was touching on me. And so I leaned on him, and I was like, look, I'm not interested in boys. I like girls. And he was like, okay, cool. But my friends behind him kept pressuring, like, what are y'all doing? Y'all, like, doing anything. And we was like, and then he was like, she don't like me. And they was like, what you mean she don't like me? And I was like, don't look at my eyes. So I leaned on, I was like, look, I'm gay. I like girls. And, like, stuff kind of, like, hit the fan after that. It's like, everybody was like, what? They were shocked. They were kind of, like, pulled away and withdrawn from me. And it took them, I was like, it probably took, like, probably, like, a couple of months for, like, people to, like, start back, like, interacting with me, like, on a normal basis and, like, not taking it as I wanted them or I was interested in them in a sexual way because I was being nice to them.
So earlier, because you mentioned this, earlier when we were talking about you were struggling with trying to figure out if you were transgender, was that during your teens, or when did you kind of go through that struggle?
I would say when I'm 18 to probably like 21, 22, because I was like going to Northwest Community College then, and it's like, mm-hmm. I've always felt like I wasn't 100% female, but I didn't feel like I was 100% male. But like mm-hmm. being in that environment and like away from my mom and like not feeling like I was just being controlled and just being encased in a box and having to be one way, I was able to kind of like figure myself out as like my best friend. If I told, like, my best friend had a problem, like, using, like, he pronouns, like, other people didn't. So it's, like, depending on the environment we were in, I would just say I was a lesbian. I was just a female. Like, and then depending on other environments, me and her, like, I would tell people, like, you know, I see myself as a boy. I'm a guy. I'm not a female. But even with that, it's, like, that just did not feel right for me. So it's, like, and then I kind of went with this whole phrase of just, like, you know, I just accept it. Like, I'm a girl, like. You're female like other girls, and I was like, there is no concept that really disguised me. I just didn't like, but I didn't feel like I really fit in with that concept either. So it's like it was always like this constant going back and forth of me like trying to figure out like what exactly is my gender identity and what does it mean to like actually have a gender. And it took from then all the way up to now for me to really, like, understand and accept myself as being, like, gray-gendered and someone who knows I have a gender, but there isn't one necessary way, good way to describe it. I have one. I just don't really know what it is. And, you know, I don't really care for they-them pronouns because, to me, they-them insinuates to me that it's two in one, and I don't feel that way. And he-him don't seem right. And just, like, I kind of, like, just stick with her because it feels more comfortable, and like that's what I've been used to using for 37 years.
Yeah. So what would you describe your gender specifically? Because I was looking at your survey, and so I was like, okay, so I'm probably going to ask about this. So where do you stand as far as your gender?
I really consider myself, like, gender nonconforming, and because, like, gray gender is, like, one of those genders that doesn't really, like, fall in, like, the normal spectrum. It's like we know we have one, but it's, like, it's not really, like, defined. It's, like, it's outside, like, the gender non-binary, but it's, like, ambivalence at the same time, like, we are, like, how we express ourselves.
Okay. Yeah, that was a new term for me. And, you know, I'm always learning and trying to stay, like, you know, aware of any new, just people finding new language of their for how to describe themselves, because it's always evolving. So, yeah, so I definitely wanted to follow up about that. So thank you. I'm going to also look more into that. But, okay.
I was actually doing research for work, and I came across the terminology, and I was reading about it, and I was like, that fits me more than any other spectrum, like, that describes a person's gender than anything, because it's like, you know, it's like, I really, like I said, I know I have one, that I'm not without one, and, like, at the same time, it's like, I'm not without expressing it. It just doesn't entirely fall within, you know, either A, B, C, or D.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So one of the things, do you feel like you were completely out by 27? Because I know it's by 27 you were like, I was bringing girlfriends around, and it just was what it was. Were you fully just out at that point?
Yes, I was like pretty much fully out at that point. And I think like the big thing for me again was the fact that I went to Itawamba Community College. Again, I was raised with my family. I got comfortable with myself. I understood myself more so. And then when I went to the Women's University, like, I broke out and I found friends who were, like, part of community. I had friends who were lesbians. I had friends that was transgender. I had friends who not necessarily were truthful about themselves being bisexual, but they behaved in ways that came off as bisexual. So it's like for me, like being in that environment allowed me to say, okay, you know what? You're an adult now. It's okay to be yourself. If family, friends, or whoever don't like it, then oh well. It's like you can't live for their happiness. Because like honestly, when I started school, like I was like miserable because like I was scared to, like, date. I was scared to, like, be in a relationship. It's like I was with girls, but I wasn't with girls. And I'm like, this isn't the way to be. At some point, I want to get married. At some point, I want to have a family. But if I keep worrying about what everybody else thinking, I'm like, I'm going to be unhappy and miserable for the rest of my life. So it's like when I hit 27, when I was at the Women's University, I was just pretty much, you know, no Hobart. I'm going to be myself 100%. It's like, I'm masculine presented, but I'm very flamboyant. I have aspects of me that comes off as very feminine. And I was like, I have aspects that come off me as very masculine. If you don't like it, you can go on. I don't care. You ain't got to be my friend. You ain't got to date me, but I'm not going to not be me. And I think my friend, like, Sebastian, like, really was, like, a big part of helping me, like, accept that, too, because Sebastian was transgendered, and he is, like, at that time was very big on just, you know, being himself and not, you know, making no excuse. Like when in the dorm it was issues, he would stand up for himself. In the classroom he would stand up for himself, you know. Mm-hmm. His parents like disowned him at the time, and he still found a way with his wife. They were like a couple at the time, but they got married while we were like at the Women's University. Mm-hmm. You know, It didn't matter, you know, he still found a way to, you know, be himself, to survive while he was in school, and I found that very, like, inspirational. I'm like, if this person can do it and they're much younger than me, then I know I can do it at the age of 27, just be myself and accept myself and push forward. And, you know, like, it was just like, so that time for it, like, seeing just, like, people able to be themselves and fight and push forward to be themselves, that gave me a new strength in who I was as a queer person, a queer back person in Mississippi at that. Because at that time, like, while I was there, I was dating a white girl, and that wasn't exactly the easiest thing either. Like, my other girlfriend, my first girlfriend, she was white as well, but, you know, we were in the closet here in Water Valley, so that wasn't so much an issue because nobody really knew we were, like, dating. But, like, when I was at the Women's University, the white girl I was dating there, it was an issue. People, like, stared us down. It's like we were out holding hands and stuff, and people was, like, giving us a look, not only because we were an interracial couple, we were, you know, a lesbian couple. And then, like, her family hated the fact that I was black. They were always calling me, like, nigger and saying that, you know, I was abusive. I was this because I was black, because we were an angry group of people. We, you know, if she's scared to get out the relationship, it's okay. They will call the police and pull her out this relationship. Like they're there for her, they support her, like she's part of the family, but until she leaves me, like they cannot have her as considered a family member. Like, it was, like, very crazy. And that was, like, my first real-time, like, experience, like, true racism, like, in that relationship. Like, I had never been called, like, a nigger before a day in my life until that moment.
So would you say... So when you first kind of met other folks who shared your identity and experience and stuff, was that college, or, like, was that when you first really found, like, community?
Yeah, college, I would say, when I first, like, found community. Like, I tried it when I was at Northwest, but it just didn't work. And I think it more so because of the fact I wasn't really comfortable in myself. But by the time I got to the Women's University, like, I was comfortable with myself, and I wanted the community. I wanted friends who I could talk to about women, or I wanted friends who, like, had the same interests as me. And it's like I was driven more so with a purpose to find that community and to find, like, a family within the community.
What were some places that you, like, some of the first places, LGBTQ places that you frequented, that you hung out at in Mississippi?
Honestly, I didn't really hang out at any because, like, I didn't really, like, know where to go. And, like, in my area, there was this one place in Tupelo that they had, but I didn't, by the time I got to an adult, like, it was closed down. So for me, like, there wasn't really, like, a place to go. It's like you went out to the club and you just, like, hung out with people you knew, or, you know, you kind of had an idea who was gay, who was straight, but I honestly never really knew where to go. So I really didn't go. And, like, everywhere I went, it was mostly, like, heterosexual people. And I think that was, like, why a majority of my friends were, like, heterosexual. I just really did not know where to go. Because, like I said, in Water Valley, I didn't really have, the friends or know who to connect with to show me those places. And so by the time I got to the Women's University, we finally, towards, my last year, we found out that Spectrum was in Memphis, and that was a gay club. And that was, my first time ever going to a gay club.
Mm. And where is Spectrum?
That was in Memphis. It's not too far from Southwest Community College.
Okay.
Now it only opens occasionally, a special event. It's open during Pride, and they've had, other events throughout the year, but they're not open annually like they used to be. But there's still, a couple of other spots in Memphis that I know of, Drew's, and there's a few other, local places.
Okay. Are you a part of a queer community? Well, you're in Memphis now, aren't you?
Well, I actually moved back to Mississippi 2 years ago to help out with my grandmother. So, but majority of the time I'm in Memphis because I work in Memphis. So, if I do anything, if I go out, if I'm dating, it's in Memphis. Because my fiance, I actually met her in Memphis through my job.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as far as being back in Mississippi, are there any queer communities that you're a part of just specifically here?
I actually haven't since I moved back to the last couple of years. I haven't had the chance because work is so busy to, try to connect to any. I know we have, the queer bookstore here in Water Valley that opened up, a couple of years ago. I went there when it first opened to, put out flyers and stuff, resources for Out Memphis, but I haven't had a chance to just go sit there and, actually visit. And that would be a great time, but with the pandemic, it's not open. So I haven't really had a chance to, get out and just actually have the opportunity because I know I was so upset that when Oxford had their first Pride, I was actually in the process of moving back down here to Mississippi, so I didn't get to go to it. And then the second year of it, I had to be out of town, so I didn't go. So I haven't really had a chance to experience the Pride in Oxford yet, and I'm beating myself up. So I have to do that. I have to.
Just since you kind of grew up, and I know you said, and I'm from a small town too, so I totally get you feel Water Valley hasn't really just changed even now since you were growing up. But are there some changes that you see, or it's particularly regarding people's just the whole climate around people being queer. Or transgender, do you see any changes from when you were growing up to now in Water Valley or Mississippi as a whole?
In some places, it's still, closed-minded. I feel like here in Water Valley, it's still semi-closed-minded. It's they're a little bit more accepting of what they used to be because it's we more so have, this idea, too, of, mind your own business. If nobody's bothering you, you don't bother them. If you're going to talk about them, you say your stuff to the side. But I know, a lot of the kids and stuff, they'll say things. They'll say mean comments. They'll throw shade. They may go TP, older LGBT community members here in town, houses and stuff like that. But, overall, the fact that they allowed that bookstore to come here, that was a big thing because I was like I said, we're considered, a very Christian town, very family-oriented town. Water Valley wants to consider itself to be, a retirement town. So, for them to allow that bookstore to come here was very shocking to me. And for the fact that it is owned by a lesbian was very shocking to me as well because I wasn't expecting that. That was something I never expected to see in Water Valley. So that is one of the biggest progressive things that I've seen here in Water Valley in my 37 years here. Now, we've had a lot of stores come and go over the years. And as far as the queer community, I feel like a lot of people are still in the closet here. You don't have a lot that's out in the open. I feel like I see more white individuals out in the open than black individuals. As far as me, I know I am very out. And now when people see me, they ask me how I'm doing. It's oh, where you been? I moved back here, but I'm in Memphis now. And who you dating? I got a fiance. I started talking about her and giving information about her. Now I don't care. Back then I'd be oh, that I'll try to take gender out of it. I'll use they, them. I'll be my friend. Now I'm oh, oh, you want to see her? She's fine as hell. Here's her picture. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is what she do.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. So I know, like, and I always forget what year this happened. What were your feelings when gay marriage was finally legalized? Because I know now you're engaged and you can finally get married. Like, just queer folks in general can finally actually have their union recognized by this country. What were your feelings when that first happened? Because that affected everywhere, even Mississippi. So
I'm not gonna lie, I was shocked. I never thought the day would come. Because in my head, I was looking up other countries to move to get married to. And I knew like in Canada you could. I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm about to become a Canadian when I get to that point. I'm gonna met the one, because I'm like, I want her to have my last name, want the kids to have my name, things like that. So when that happened, I literally like broke down and cried, because I did not think, like, when I saw it, it's like one of those things you see it, but you don't really believe it's real. And like, it took me, like, I think it literally took me like 2 weeks to really fully process it and understand, like, this was the law of the land, like, this was a reality. Because I never thought like America would get to that point where it was legal in all the states. I never thought I would see that. I thought I would be like old and on my deathbed before that actually happened.
Well, I think, so before we wrap up, was there anything else that came to mind that you'd like to share that I didn't ask about, as far as like just this project or thinking about your experience growing up as a queer person in Mississippi?
I just think like my experience overall here in Mississippi has helped shape me to the person that I am. It, you know, I really want to be like a big queer black leader, because there aren't a lot of us. Like Martavius Hampton, he just recently retired from out Memphis, was the first black person to be in that center. He was there for 10 years running our sexual health department. He literally started that department from ground. And, you know, I want to be like him, like in the community. I want to be someone that makes a difference in a black young queer youth person, because we don't have a lot of role models here in the South, and particularly like in Mississippi. So to me, that's like very important and very big. And like, I'm grateful for this opportunity at Out Memphis to shake way and, you know, carve the path for the next generation of queer black individuals. So like, and like this opportunity to like share my story. Like, I know like down the road, like when I'm gone, like this will make an impact on somebody, and that makes me happy as well. It's actually making me emotional. So, you know, that's cool, like, to me, because, you know, history makes a difference. So when you tell your story and it's out there, you know, you become an inspiration for somebody. So that's important for me, and especially in the queer community, because, like I say, you don't have a lot of, in the South, you don't really see a lot of big individuals. Like Kayla Gore, my former coworker at Out Memphis, is another big one in the black trans community. She is another person that I hold in high esteem and respect a lot. So, like, to see, like, to have, like, those individuals like coming up, like I want to see more of that here in Mississippi. And I know like it's slowly changing, and I see the change, and I know like as the black community fuels and advance and gets more ground and leeway, like we'll have more leaders doing things and community centers popping up and other investments that you're seeing like in Memphis and in other cities.
Yeah, and that made me think, I don't think we're over time, but that what you just said made me think about something else I was wondering about. And so I know you said you mostly work with mostly black queer youth.
Mm-hmm.
So working with them, like, how do you think the visibility of you and other black queer people is impacting them? Like, do you see the impact just day to day, even with how they express themselves? Do you see the impact of them just having what you didn't have growing up?
I do, because like I said, like there are some times I thought about running away, but I didn't run away because I didn't have anywhere to go. So for these individuals to like be in abusive family homes to actually come out, members can get housing, you know, that has made a change, and then, you know, they're not out there selling themselves on the streets. And, like, we've had clients come in that were sex workers, you know, and, like, that was all they knew how to do to make income. And some of them, you know, I got to transition out of it, and they have jobs now. You know, I have clients who or enrolled in college who never thought they were going to be enrolled in college. They always thought, like, I'm never going to amount to anything because, you know, black people, especially black queer people, we don't have anything. And to come to that center and see me, you know, a black masculine-presenting individual, Martavis, a black gay man, and then Jesse Claudio, a Latinx individual over, you know, part of our sexual health department. And you had Kayla Gore, who was once our trans service specialist, you know, showing that, you know, black people can come up because she was homeless as well. So, you know, to see that you can come up from being homeless to have this position and make an impact on the community, you can. And we've had a few of them, through me talking to them, actually, like, volunteer. And I had one actually enroll in school for psychology because I was telling them that was what my degree was in. And so they said, okay, well, Ms. Bell, like, you having that degree and you going this down this field in social work and stuff, that's changed me. I want to change and make a difference, too. I want my story to help someone. So to hear them actually coming to me and talking to me and telling me this, it means a lot. Because I had a client who was positive who was had a very bad home experience. And when I got this individual house, he broke down and started crying with me. And we just sat there in tears crying. He said, you don't know how big of a difference you have made in my life. He's like, I was on the verge of going and killing myself until I met you. And, you know, to hear someone say that, like, is very empowering for me. And it keeps me, like, pushing forward to try to make a difference, to try to, like, change every aspect of not just, you know, the gay community, because the gay community isn't exactly open to black individuals. We still have racism to deal in there, but to try to change family concept. Like, anytime I got a time, like, mom, my cousin make a post about something about transgender people or queer history being taught in school, I'm on it. I was like, and you can block me if you want to. I don't care. I see you at the next family. I'm going to come back to you. I'm going to bring it to you even harder. So it's like, I really try to use any platform I have to talk about it. Like, even when I had the opportunity to speak at Point Source Youth in Atlanta, you know, I was very open and transparent about, hey, not all my youth are successful, but I take what I learned from the ones not being successful and try to change and apply to make my program better, because I'm like, I'd be real with y'all. Like, HUD tell us they want one thing, but the reality of we're dealing with human beings, and human beings you cannot control.
Yeah, and there's so many other things they have to deal with to try to navigate all that. One other thing, I'm sorry, this has been such, I'm so thankful for all that you shared. There was one more thing, like, and just because, and just as somebody who's a part of the community and just following a lot of different stuff, for Mississippi, because I know there's a lot of groups and there's a lot of change happening, but it's kind of concentrated in places like Jackson. What do you think we could do, or just in general, that what do you think would be, I'm trying to word this question because this is actually not even in my notes. This is a question that just came to mind. What would be a good way to better support, like, particularly black or other LGBTQ youth of color that are in more rural areas? Because they are really a lot more isolated, and so they don't have access or even know about the type of program that you're involved in with helping homeless youth. Like, I had no idea that existed, and I grew up in a very small town and kind of rural area. So how do you think, what are your thoughts on, like, what could be something to help those youth, particularly queer youth of color in Mississippi?
I think the biggest thing is we got to get, like, some type of, like, groups going. Like, you know, like, we have PRISM, which is for 13 to 17, and we are a family for families and children 0 to 12 at Out Memphis. And I think that's going to be, like, the biggest thing. Like, we're going to have to, like, for queer leaders who are actually out and in the community, like, they're going to have to, like, step up and, like, have different things in their community, even if it's, like, a block party or something small and simple like that, to, like, allow the community to come together and show that, you know, there is support and that they are willing to do what is necessary for it. But I think in these rural areas, we're very scared because, you know, even though Water Valley is small, I've never been, like, physically attacked or anything. Well, that's a blessing, I see it, because I've heard people who live in smaller areas where they talk about being attacked and beat up for being queer. And my partner is also from Mississippi. And, you know, she was like, she is still, like, in, like, a box. She is, like, extremely private about her sexuality, her relationship, is like, I'm not even allowed to put on Facebook that we're in a relationship. Like, I have to be conscious of how I post and share things and like things on Facebook and how I express about our relationship because of that. And it's very straining for me, someone who is to that point that I'm very out and I don't care. But then it also comes from the fact that she comes from a very religious family as well. So I, even now when I'm talking, I'm trying to make sure I'm talking in a way that it won't, people won't put two and two together, because like, I want to talk more about her, because if you notice, I haven't really talked about her. And like, she's an amazing person. She's very brilliant, very intelligent and everything. But at the same time, you know, like I have to, like, with that, I have to, like, be careful of, like, how I speak and how I talk, so where I'm not overstepping boundaries for her. And it's very difficult. And I think, like, one of the things, like, too, is, like, we're going to have to change, like, in the rural areas, like, that concept of that thought about, like, it's not okay for people to be themselves. Like, they're going to go to hell and that, you know, that they're damned for being themselves. We got to give them that space to be themselves and let that judgment happen when their time comes and stop trying to be the judgment in the here and now. And just have groups, support groups, and connecting them to the resources that are there. Because, like, even so, like, even at Al Memphis, I talked to them, I told them, like, I know we don't really work with the rural areas, but I was like, this community is suffering. I'm saying this to somebody who is from a rural area. And it may have to get to the point where, like, Jackson, like, since Jackson does have those resources, they might have to go to the route of offering, like, virtual resources where they can go in, log in on Zoom or have something on Facebook or something of that type to give these people what they're needing, because it's like, it has to start somewhere. And even if it's just something small as the virtual world, that can transpire to something even big.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you so much. Also, one other thing, because you referenced a couple of people, and one of the things we're doing is we're trying to snowball after interviews. So are there any other people from Mississippi that are queer that might be willing to talk to me and be a part of this project?
I have some former high school classmates who are from Mississippi. One, he is in New York. I can reach out to him and see if he's interested in it. And, like, I can also ask, like, some of my, like I said, some of my friends that was from, like, the Women's University, if they would be interested in it.
Yeah. So anybody that's from Mississippi or even currently living in Mississippi who would be, you can email me their names, but as well. And preferably if they're of color. I'm willing to talk to anybody, but I know for me, for this project, I've really been wanting to, focus on folks of color. So if you know anybody that's queer and that would be willing to talk to me and be a part of this project, just feel free to, I'll probably follow up again, but feel free to send me their information, or you can send them mine, whichever one is works best for them.
Yeah, okay, I most definitely will, because I feel like it's important for us to, like, get our stories and stuff out, so most definitely will, like, see who all I can get interested in it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Like, this was really great, and thank you for being so generous with your time.
You're welcome.
I got your survey and everything else, so I got everything I need. So what will happen is I'm going to definitely by the end of next week, I'm going to send you a transcript of the interview. And if you like the audio, but mainly it's to just make sure if there's anything you want to correct or if you accidentally said a wrong date or something like that I need to correct, you can kind of skim through the transcript, because I would need you to look at it. And then once you okay it, it'll go into my private group, the Google Drive for the project, and then eventually we'll upload it and everything. But I just wanted to give you a chance to kind of look through it and let me know if there's anything that needs to be changed or corrected.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you again. I I really enjoyed talking to you, and it was really nice to hear your story as somebody from Mississippi who hasn't been able to get out yet. So. But, yeah, so anyway, if you need anything, I'm probably going to send a follow-up email, but if you need anything, feel free to shoot me an email and that kind of thing. And okay. I'll be in touch again next week with the transcript of our interview.
Okay.
All righty. Well, thank you again for talking to me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
No.
Okay. You have a great day. If you need anything else, just like email me or call me.
All right. Thanks again. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.